What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday.
I want to get into the details. Maybe taking some inspiration from other places that you've seen, what ingredients are necessary for, you know, Henry's Perfect Range?
I think an eggplant, in a little bit different way, is a long lost relative of the potato.
Great call out on the college facilities. Like, if you're going to look at who does practice facilities the best, that's where you got to look. That's where the money and the thought is. So yeah, really good call out there. I know what you're talking about. And they also have nets too. But you want to
No nets.
Bang.
What were you rocking this morning on the coffee front?
Oh, I'm rocking Good Walk Coffee, South American Dark, pure fire, straight into my soul. No Mudball Half Calf this morning. Yourself?
Both. I've got the Mudball Half Calf going, and then this is the Dew Sweeper Medium Dark. Shit is nice. Also, shout out a couple stickers here. We got friends at Good Walk Coffee. We got our friends over at Four Wind Golf. I like keeping, keeping some stickers on the mug there. Mudball Monday. Here we are, episode 121. We're talking practice facilities. I feel like it's something that doesn't, in the context of golf course architecture, people don't talk a lot about the practice facilities at different golf courses. You know, if we're going to do it, I think that it's important to place that within kind of the right topic of conversation with a golf course. And so I think our three categories today are, we're going to start with, okay, well, if we're going to talk about creating a great practice facility, what sort of a golf course are we talking about? Because that looks significantly different if you're talking about, you know, a member play sort of course versus a resort sort of course versus something that's tailored towards high level competitive play. Our second bucket will be just the practice facilities themselves. So starting with A, what does that mean for B? And then finally for C, we're going to be talking about, how does this situate within the day, within the club itself? Where are the practice facilities going to be located? How does that create flow within the day, within the round, all of those sorts of things? So that's kind of our ABC for the episode. But of course, the true A and B is always the dirt, the drinking, the eating, the reading, and the thinking. Walker Simas will lead us off and I will follow up. So Walker, give it to us. It's dirt season.
There is also an A to B to the drinking category, to the D. And that is hydration and caffeination. And I'll let you take the latter, but
and it's Super Bowl Sunday. So there's some, you know, alcoholation or something, however you want to put that, coming in.
That's
there.
Right. The third ball.
Inebriation, I think, is the one that I was looking for.
Definitely the one.
There we go.
America tonight. I want to call out, this is kind of a buddy of mine made this up, but I tried it. Been working on like the best sauna beverage. You know, because if you go in there and you're going to sit in there for, call it 20 to 30 minutes a day, you are losing a lot of water. And sure, you can come home and drink some electrolytes or whatever, but I like the ritual of going in there with, you know, 16 plus ounces of something and just making sure when I leave, I'm in a good spot. And so for the longest time, I just did water and some salt, and that was it. And I was on the phone with a good buddy the other day, and he was telling me that he does water and just the night before squeezes half a lemon in there and lets it sit, and goes into the sauna with that. So we've kind of been picking at it and editing it. And I think I've settled on the perfect sauna beverage. And that is half coconut water, pinch of salt, a little bit of lemon or lime, and like three drops of maple syrup. It is so fucking good. I highly recommend it for all of you who sauna on a regular basis. Go get after it and let us know what you think. But I think that is the perfect recipe. A little bit of sweetness, a little bit of acid, a lot of hydration. It's very, very good. I think that's it. I mean, I've had some kombucha, which was great. I had an elderberry kombucha. You know, when you get one that has some spices in it that you go, ooh, ooh, hey. That was interesting. And elderberry was that. Really nice. What's
Tell
your
this,
favorite?
What the fuck is an elderberry? Like, is that,
I have no
is
idea.
That actually a berry?
Look, so I'm surprised that Big Blueberry didn't sweep in here and just buy out, Little Elderberry. It's definitely got a different flavor, but it's got the same kind of like bitter peel taste, I think. But I
So
don't
here's
know.
my
We may
take.
have to come back with some more research on that.
We'll be back to you guys next Bun Ball Monday. I think what's probably going on here with Elderberry is this is pure Big Blueberry marketing. It's just a fucking blueberry, but they've rebranded into this Elderberry and they're like, oh, it's all special. It's the Elderberry. It's like the Elder Wand. And they're just jacking the price up. It's surely Big Blueberry just on some shit.
It's Big Blueberry with some cinnamon and cardamom or something. That's kind of what it tastes like. We'll see. It's kind of like goji berries too. Goji berries have
Exactly.
kinda
Yes.
they've always
That's not
rubbed me
a
the wrong
thing.
way.
That's Big
No.
Blueberry. Acai. Acai is the
No.
same thing.
Well, I think goji is Big Raz. I think that's,
Oh, okay.
they're hanging out at the cousin party.
Big
Anyways.
Raz is so deep on the shit. I have
I
not,
know.
since I called it off with the stems with Big Raspberry, shit you not, I have not bought a raspberry since then. They are dead to me, which is so brutal because I love raspberries, but I hate Big Raspberry.
Can you give us just a very brief standings update? Is Big Raz ahead of Chipotle, or is Chipotle slightly ahead of Big Raz? Both very, very low down on the list. It's dark down
You know,
there.
you made the call recently that you miss Chipotle. I'm so in the same boat. I really do. Like it's kind of been calling me back. And I'm never ordering it again, but I've thought about going in the restaurant so I can like give someone the stink eye and be like, you better fill my bowl up. But no, I'm not going back. Like it's just principle at this point. So when we talk about how I'm actually living this out, I think Chipotle is the furthest down the shit list. Big Raz, I've not given them my business directly, but like if it, I guess, you're indirectly doing so if you order it and it comes on something or like as a side, I'll still consume some raspberries. So yeah, I think it's safe to say Chipotle, Big Chipotle is just so far down the list, and then Big Raz is up above it, but still just rubbed such the wrong way of them freezing the ones with stems in. It's just a brutal situation. All right, we're taking too much time here.
That was the longest dirt of all time. Well, it was the longest drinking category of all time. Eating. I've been eating plantains this week. There
Hell
are
yeah.
plantains in the Publix freezer aisle, and I was doubtful, so I only bought one box, but I so highly recommend. One thing that I've been challenged on in the last couple of years is just kind of reigniting my relationship with the microwave, and this was a great exercise for that. Got into the microwave 3 to 4 minutes and then kind of into the pan with some lime zest on top. Very, very attractive dish. Very easy dish too. Frittatas, orange juice. I guess that was part of my drinking. We'll leave that where it is. That's eating. Reading. I'm reading Everybody Always by Bob Goff. Honestly, I really haven't enjoyed the book that much. I really like the other two books that I've read by Bob Goff. This is a wandering type book. I feel like he just has not done a very good job of like getting to the point. It's a very mystical, whimsical type book. So it hasn't been my favorite, but I did pick up there was a good chapter this week that reminded me of Matthew McConaughey's Green Lights. And he was talking like the moral of the story basically was you don't need as much confirmation as you'd sometimes like in life. Sometimes you're not going to have a 93% likelihood or an 85% likelihood. You just kind of have to go with your gut, go with your faith more or less. And I think the idea that I kind of got with that chapter is like, hey, just go live massively, be wrong because you will be. But eventually you'll kind of get it right. You'll get the right idea. So I'm looking forward to turning the corner and picking up a new book, but I am challenging myself to kind of stay with these last couple chapters as I close this out. Thinking, I guess yesterday I got the drone out again. I was shooting some film of some buddies in town doing some running on Bayshore. And as those of you who are familiar with Tampa know, we've got the Tampa airport just north of the city. And then we've got MacDill Air Force Base, which is on South Tampa. So it is pretty sketchy, to say the least, with a drone. But as soon as you creep further down south towards the base, it's no-no land. And I got dangerously close to no-no land. I thought I was going to lose a drone, but we are A-okay. Nobody's knocked on my door yet, so I think we're all good. Henry, after the longest dirt ever, I'm tossing it back to you. Please tell us what has been in the drinking, eating, reading, and thinking category this week.
So for the drinking, I come with updates with our friends over at Good Walk Coffee. We are moving on. This is to come in the next few weeks. We are moving on from the Mudball Half Calf. If you're a fan,
What?
stock up while you can. Look, business is booming at the Tide Podcast. We have been busy. We are pumping out content. And what comes with content, Mr. Simus? Caffeine. We
Coffee.
need caffeine. And so Mudball Half Calf is just not quite doing it for the Thai guys these days. So the Mudball Medium Roast is on its way. We are deep, deep in the R&D on some proprietary blends. We've got something fire coming to you all soon. But just a quick update there to let you know what's happening. And if you are a fan of Mudball Half Calf, which is right here, if my thumb is correct, stock up while you can. So that'll be all for my drinking category this week. Also, one quick sidebar. You mentioned the sauna drink. Do you recall the Rocky Mountain Hammer that I was getting after at the US Amateur this summer?
Dude, I don't think so. Tell me about it.
Coconut water with electrolytes mixed in, just like the ultimate hydration drink. I
That's
might have
jet
to
fuel.
game one of those in the sauna. Just as you were talking about your sauna drinking, that's what came to mind, the old Rocky Mountain Hammer.
That's
Okay,
great.
moving on to my eating. Two things to call out this week. I mean, once again, the tortilla just makes itself abundantly present in my weekly eating. My body count this week was only 7. That's tacos, which
Thank you.
I think that's reasonable. Like, that's a little bit of a low week, frankly. I'm somewhat disappointed with myself. I mean, look, it's Sunday morning. Like, we got time here. I could double or triple that pretty easily, especially on Super Bowl Sunday. But the tortilla just always getting in the game. I had, you know. This is something I eat, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 times a year, but I could eat 2 or 3 times a week if there was a good one around me. Had a chicken Caesar wrap yesterday. Just always a rock solid play. So yeah, the tortilla has kind of been the through line, at least from the vehicle category this week. The through line as of late, I don't know if this is really a vegetable or what, and you emoji enthusiasts can go ahead and exit stage left, but I'm a big fan of eggplants, and I've been eating a lot of eggplant recently. When done right, or honestly not right, eggplant's one of those things, like, unless you just burn it, it's really hard to mess up an eggplant. I think an eggplant in a little bit different way is a long lost relative of the potato. You can do so much with eggplant. You know, you could, same with a potato, like, you can fry it, you can chip it, you can roast it, and it's good regardless. You can make some great dips. I don't know of any potato dips. Does anyone make dips out of potato?
I feel like any sort of chip or vessel, if you will, would be too heavy dipping in mashed potato.
Well, I mean, mashed potatoes, right? But, like, it's not a dip.
But if you're gonna dip into potatoes, it's got to be mashed potatoes, I would imagine, unless you had
That's
some sort
true.
of really small Michelin star dice or something, which would be interesting.
What would you dip into mashed potatoes, though? Obviously, you know, spoon, but have
We're not
you ever
dipping into
seen?
mashed potatoes.
No, yeah,
And
we're moving on from that. That's, you
yeah.
know. Yeah, that's not it. That's ranch and pizza. Okay. Eggplant, you know, baba ganoush. I mean, just there's so many great applications to the eggplant. And I've been getting after that recently. So that's all I'm going to call out in my drinking, or excuse me, my eating. It's been tortillas and eggplants. That's wow. What a time to be alive. Moving on to my reading, still working through The Gambler, Billy Walters. I think this week's learning from that, as I move towards the part of the book where there's still a lot of silliness going on, a lot of gambling, a lot of crazy shit, but he's making it into his middle ages and is, like, starting to really prosper as like a proper sports gambler, as well as a businessman, real estate development, golf course development, all sorts of things. I think what that's really made me think about is, I mean, this is a guy whose life was just in shambles for years and years, you know, could have been in prison multiple times, run-ins with the mafia, like, all sorts of stuff, broke time and time again. it just shows that people's career arcs take very different shapes and different timelines. And so, you know, if you're 37 years old and things aren't great, like, doesn't mean at 51 things might not be great, right? If you're doing great at 31, doesn't mean that things will be great at 45. You know, you just got to stay the course and keep working at it, and you know, things come around eventually. So that's what I've been thinking about based on my reading this week. And then my thinking, and I think this is, I had this coming in, but even further accentuated by what you talked about in your reading of just like, you know, the book you're reading being kind of meandersome and not getting to the point, just how important it is, especially in this game that we play with content and all, of being an effective communicator, not just interpersonally, but people get caught in this like, oh, well, you know, if I just post a bunch of reels, that's great, you know, but if you're not sticking to the basics of like, well, what are you actively doing to communicate effectively and efficiently through the content you're creating? And, you know, with your personal life and your work life, if you're not an effective communicator with what you're doing, then, you know, you're just kind of throwing a bunch of words at the wall. So, that's something that I've been thinking about again, within the context of what we do, but then also just in all parts of life, is really thinking about how can I put myself in somebody else's shoes and communicate what I'm trying to communicate to them so that they can understand it best. It's been something that's really been swimming in the dome. Maybe the dome has been swimming in that as of late. So we'll move on. We'll talk about golf now. We'll talk about practice facilities, and we'll go to bucket A, which I'll kick to you, Mr. Simas. All right, so let's situate this within the Thai Golf Club. It's coming. It's not coming today. It's not coming tomorrow, but it's coming at some point. And we got to think first about, okay, well, what is the Thai Golf Club? Like, what sort of golf course do we want here? Who do we want this to mainly be catered towards? And then what's kind of the full breadth of you know, what this course can accomplish? Is it mainly a club play course? Is it mainly a tournament course? Is it, you know, X parts one, Y parts two? Who is this golf course for? How would you describe it? And then once we have the groundwork laid there, we can talk more about, okay, so based on that, what's the practice facility going to look like?
There's so many ways I could approach this. I've been playing around with this idea of a club where the fitness, the wellness, and the practice are inner city. And the golf is rural, because it solves a couple major problems that I see at a lot of clubs. And I'm not talking Florida here. I'm not talking Austin here. I'm just talking generally first.
Kathmandu, Royal right. Nepal Golf Club.
Exactly. Whack Whack.
Whack Whack.
That was a great one. I'll never forget Whack Whack. Anyways, I feel like with a lot of these inner city clubs, and we're both familiar with this, you just have a lot of members who want different things out of the club. And that's fine, but it causes some sort of congestion. When you have a rural club, there are obvious drawbacks there, and that you have to travel to it. So you end up doing these big days because you can't get out there as much as you'd like. Remember, the third big problem with clubs that I see is, you know, there are a lot of members, so people want a wide array of benefits from the club: wellness, fitness, golf, dining, you know, weddings, the works, right? And you can't do all of it, so you kind of have to curate what you want. I like the idea of having an inner city club that is more social, that is more fitness oriented, that is more wellness oriented, where you can actually go hit balls for 40 minutes and get back to your family. And then this idea where you really get this desire to take that 40-minute drive and to spend a whole day out at this rural club with a much different vibe than you have inner city, and go out and do the dance and play, you know, bring your friends and play with other members and really experience the golf course, get away for a little bit. And so that brings me to two conversations as far as practice facilities go, because you need one inner city and you need one at the club, and you don't want to spend all your coin on one or the other. So before I get into this briefly, I want to hear any feedback you have on that, because that was not something that we talked about prior to recording. And what your differences are as far as what you would want at maybe a single location.
Well, I really like the concept. I think it creates a nice divide between what are you trying to accomplish with your golf today? What's the intent here? Is this a practice session? Like, say you had the full donger downtown, you know, like that's where you're going to like really get after it. I've got an hour and a half and I'm going to practice today. I'm going to hit wedges. I'm going to dial it in. That's great. I've got 4 hours. I'm gonna go play golf. Like I'm just, we will absolutely, for anyone already concerned, like I'm getting it in there early. We will absolutely have the warm-up nets at the Thai Golf Club because it's just one of the best things in practice. So that of course will be there. Where I'll not push back on you, but kind of like push back to where we started, I guess. I do need the context on, well, what is our golf course, right? Like if this is a member play course, awesome. Like then we have the downtown facility. People go there if they want to just get some practice in. And then it's bare bones when you actually get out to the club. We've got hitting nets. We've got a little putting green. Practice is a sub 20-minute ordeal when you get to the club, if it's generally member play. That said, if we do want the ability to host tournaments, you kind of can't have the two separated. You do need the proper facility to be within the actual golf course itself. So again, I'll go back and say, before I really get in the weeds, we need to define what is this golf club going to be for? What is this golf course going to be for? Who is it going to be for?
It's a great question. This worked out great because the club will be rural. It will be a club that is able to host a tournament with a crowd. However, this will be a members golf course. I think we're fairly aligned on this. It will be a members golf course where 90 plus percent of those who travel to go play it will be warming up for less than 10 minutes. So there will be an area to hit golf balls. It can be sharpened up if a tournament were to happen there. People wouldn't have to warm up off site. But it is not a club culture where people bang balls for even 30 minutes. So that's kind of my idea is, hey, you want to practice and get some work done and hone your game? Do it at the inner city location. When you want to come and play golf and experience, 4 hours outside, then you come and do that. You can get a couple swings in, but that's it.
You know, you led there with saying I asked a great question, which I appreciate your vote of confidence in my question asking there. Another
You're
great question
absolutely welcome.
that I want to ask you is this coffee is so great. We didn't mention what people need to do to get after some Good Walk coffee. Where can the people go? What do they need to do to
God
get amongst
bless.
this Good Walk coffee?
That's goodwalkcoffee.com. You can use code the tie, that is THETIE, to rack up 20% off. 20% off on these beans. Are you kidding me? No, we're not kidding you. Go ahead and place your order today. And be as happy as these two guys are sitting behind the mics talking about ranges on theoretical golf clubs. That's good stuff.
So, jumping off here, we'll kind of move into category two here, talking about, okay, so we've laid the groundwork. This is generally speaking, a member play sort of club. Doesn't mean it's not going to have some bite. Doesn't mean there's not going to be plenty of action on this golf course. It's not just going to be for funsies and be easy, but it's not going to be 7,700 yards. It's going to be great architecture. It's going to be, you know, a thoughtful piece of land is the way I like to think about a golf course. I'm not out there to necessarily say, what's the best course I can fit within a tiny parcel of land? But I want everything to be very meaningful. And so I think by separating these two, I love what you said about it applying to different types of members. Some people just want to practice. Some people want to practice, have a couple drinks, all that sort of jazz. Some people just purely want to play golf. So I actually think it does make some sense to separate the two to some degree. So seeing as that's the direction that we're kind of going to go, and final piece there. Probably host something. We'll have some events here and there. And you got to
Absolutely.
have your facility on site. I've played just way too many golf courses, golf tournaments rather, where the practice is done elsewhere. And it's just like, it sucks. It just adds so much time to the day. Like rather than showing up at the course an hour before, you know, putting your shoes on, get the sunscreen, have a little food, go practice for 35 minutes. That's kind of how I typically do it before a tournament round. You just add like 45 minutes onto that to shuttle and all of that craziness, and it's just no good.
Let me ask you a question. Before a tournament, any sort of competitive event, regardless of how serious it is, would you rather have 10 swings that are just a few steps away, or 100, not that you would take 100 swings, but 100 swings that were a mile away from the clubhouse or the first tee?
I'm not going to be stupid and say I'd rather have one swing that's 10 steps away, but I think I would take like six or seven swings right near the tee as opposed to 100 further away.
Yeah.
It's just not good. So anyway, back
So
on topic.
I want to get into the details. Maybe taking some inspiration from other places that you've seen, what ingredients are necessary for, Henry's perfect range?
So let's keep rolling on here with the idea that okay, the proper facility is your in-town club. That's where I'm going when it's like I've got 75 or 90 minutes or something like that, and I want to get some work in. So let's talk about that first. That to me is going to look much like a really good college practice facility where there's not necessarily like here's your teeing area for the range. You do need that a little bit where it's like, hey, this is where people are banging drivers, especially when it comes within a club culture where not everyone is the same quality of player and hasn't experienced that sort of practice facility before. So you do kind of need to give people some direction on like, this is where you go for this, this is where you go for that. But to the degree possible and realistic, I like the idea of practice facilities where it's more of, okay, we have a number of greens that maybe are surrounded by bunkers and different things, and kind of the whole thing is your playground. You can hit wedges to different greens. You can practice short game on different greens. You can hit 7 irons, 4 irons. You can hit shots to different greens and kind of make it up as you go. I think that is what's most intriguing for kind of like the realistic, bigger practice facility. And I think that's something that's going to appeal to a lot of people. What makes practice A, more meaningful and B, more fun. Now, moving on towards the practice facility that's going to be at the club itself, at the actual golf course, warm-up nets, of course, that's going to be my gamer anytime I'm going to play. But we'll have just kind of just a field, honestly. Like, I don't think a practice facility, if you're actually hitting on a range prior to a round, and that is your okay, so let's use some different terminology here because I think that's what I'm trying to communicate here is that there's a difference between a warm-up range and a practice range. The practice range is downtown. That's where we're actually, going out with a plan, trying to get better at the game, working on something for an amount of time. A warm-up range, similar to a warm-up net, is purely to prepare yourself to go play golf. You're not looking at shot shapes. You're trying to miss the hosel. You're trying to not chunk your wedges, and you're just getting ready to hit 25 balls, if that, before you go play a round of golf. So to me, when we talk about what's going to be at the actual golf course, that's what it looks like. It's just something that's purely to be able to hit driver, because if people are playing a tournament, they want to be able to swing a driver, but it's just to get ready to go. You'll have maybe a small chipping green. You'll certainly have a putting green, just enough for people to say, okay, I've put in my time. I'm ready to go. I could play a tournament round. I could play a regular round, but that's it. In fact, I think that it's important to not offer too much to some degree, because when you do have a larger short game facility that's right near the clubhouse, all of these things, it entices people to take more time. And I like this idea of separating the two. So it's that if you're going to play golf, let's keep things moving. Like, let's not entice people to take any more time than necessary. Take that downtown. And once you do that, once you go there, that's when you're actually there to stay a while.
I love that. And I think some of us are sitting here thinking, well, shit, Henry went to Stanford. You've got probably the best model you could ever think of, as far as a practice facility, and great call out on the college, facilities. Like, if you're going to look at who does practice facilities the best, that's where you got to look. That's where the money and the thought is. So yeah, really good call out there. I'm curious what you think about features on the driving range. Personally, I love a field. I don't need a Redan to hit to practice a certain shot shape.
This
Would it
is
be
interesting.
cool? Yeah. Is it a good use of resources? Probably not. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, pretty anti, similar to you. I think it's A, a big ass waste of money, and B, I think that really good practice facilities have smaller greens. I think that that's a great hack. I won't give a shout out here, but can't believe I remember this. But way back in the day, I mean, long time ago now that I was going through the college recruiting process, I remember a coach, you know, we're talking about college facilities here, explaining their practice facility to me. And part of what he decided to do with it was make the greens smaller than you're pretty much ever going to see on a course. Because he was like, so if my guys can consistently grab a 7 iron and feel like they're hitting the green 7 out of 10 times to that smallish green out there, they're not even going to realize it, but they'll be getting better. Because if you can consistently hit that green, then let's throw some numbers at it. Let's say it's, I'm bad here. You'll be able to correct me on this one. I don't know square footage sizes super well. It's 8,000 square feet, pretty small for a green. 10,000 square feet. Okay. And what's big? Not St. Andrew's big, but like reasonably big. 40?
I would
50?
say these days 50. I mean,
Okay.
10 years ago, well, alas, it's crazy, but I won't get in a tangent.
Okay. So let's say that, you know, your average, you're playing a course where your average green sign is 25,000 square feet. If your greens on the practice facility are more like 8 or 10,000 square feet, you won't even recognize it, but you're getting better at golf by actually consciously hitting the greens. And if you're consistently hitting them, it's just like, oh man, it's like, you know, this is easier than I thought once you get out on the course. So that's something that I think is really interesting when it comes to a practice facility. But that's to say, throw maybe a bunker around that green and have the green be a small little circle. We do not need to be getting into features on the practice facility. There are only so many shapers in the world. They've got a tough job. They've got to burn long hours. Let them do their job on the golf course.
Amen. I agree with that take. And another question, talk to me about carry numbers and how the best players practice and how you can somehow create a range without doing too much that helps you with feedback on carry numbers. Obviously, you need some sort of device or at least range finder, but is that important to you? Do you think about that at all when looking at building a range, like I want to know my carry numbers better, or is it not that
Yeah,
important?
100%. I mean, that is the metric when it comes to when you talk about professional golf, when it comes to what differentiates true top end ball strikers versus not top end ball strikers, it's distance control. And so, you know, I'll go back to the well there on my idea of smaller greens on a practice facility, like both having a smaller range from the edge of the green to where the pin sits, but then also, you know, that goes the same way if you're putting it in the middle of a circle where your radius is just simply smaller. And so if you're able to hit that green, both, you know, short of the hole and long of the hole, you know, it's kind of that like hacking yourself to improve your distance control. Another thing that I'm a massive proponent of that you see at the vast majority of college practice facilities is the signs for wedges. I mean, it's just like, it's fun. Do you know what I'm talking about? The metal signs.
I know what you're talking about. And they also have nets too, but you want to
Yeah,
hit the
but
bang.
no nets, no nets, no nets.
Bang.
That's like, you know, there are a lot of PTSD sort of memories when it comes to practicing golf in college. But when you're sitting there and it's like, hey guys, like you got to be at this station until you hit the sign 3 times. When you hit it and it's loud and everybody on the facility hears it and people are yelling, it's fantastic stuff. So it's more signs, please, because by definition, you can't be off by more than really not even a yard, I don't think. If we're talking about a ball that hits the very front edge of the sign versus a ball that would catch the very back edge, that ball that hits the back edge probably is going to carry 2 to 3 yards longer, depending on the exact angle of attack there or trajectory of the golf ball. So more signs, please. Like you never see it. It just general golf courses and why that is, I'm confused by because those things, I mean, you could build them, right? Someone who's handy could create those things. You don't even need to spend a bunch of extra money on it. So I'm a huge proponent of that. Let's go ahead and graduate to tier three here of the conversation. And I want to kick this one to you for let's talk a little spatial planning. Let's set aside. So we've got
House
our
theory?
downtown facility. Absolutely, house theory. We've got our downtown facility. That thing's going to be awesome. We've covered that. Let's talk about the golf course. Let's talk about our warm-up nets, of course. Please don't leave those out. Let's talk about our warm-up range, maybe our little chipping green, our putting green. Hit me with some spatial planning and just walk me through the entire process here. So you're going out to play golf. You're going to make the drive. Hopefully it's not 40 minutes, you know, maybe 20, 15, 25. And you park your car, you put your shoes on, the locker room, you know, there's this whole procession of events that takes place when it comes to playing a round of golf. Lay out for me where we're going to have the range, where we're going to have the putting green, where we're going to have the chipping green, all relative to the first tee, to the locker room, all of the different things, so that it makes sense. Because there's nothing worse than when you get to a club and it's like, hey, you want to hit some balls? Okay, well, you got to take a cart and go out there. Then you got to come back and, oh, like after that, actually, like, you know, maybe go back to the locker room to like check in with this dude and all that. And then you go to the pro shop and then, oh, yeah, and then the putting green's way over there. And then you make it to the first tee. Bullshit. We want it to all make sense. So, Mr. Simus, please make some sense of it for me.
All right. I'm struggling a little bit with the situation of the men's locker room, but outside of that, I think I've got the whole thing figured out. We're gonna take inspiration today by Henry Ford, and we're just gonna fucking one after the other, just assembly line this shit.
Assembly line.
What do you want to do when you get to the golf course if you want to waste the least amount of time? The first thing is you want to get on with it. You don't want to arrive and then get in a conversation with somebody and that thing takes too long and now you can't hit as many balls as you need to and oh yeah, I gotta fill up my water bottle and I'm late for the first tee. That is not what we want. You want privacy until check-in because the closer you get to your tee time, with check-in, you should be like, hey, I gotta be on the tee. But you've already gotten your stuff done. So you wanna get out of the car, you wanna have access to the men's locker room, do the niceties,
The
take
five
a
S's,
piss.
of course.
The five S's exactly, Henry Shim. And then you want to hit your balls. You want to get loose, get the
Golf
rotation going,
balls.
crack the spine. That's right. Back management program, as we discussed with the cookie jar guys. If you haven't listened to that pod, go ahead and do that right now. You want to hit balls, and my big thing here that's so challenging, but I get to do it because it's a theoretical Mudball Monday, is like most of the time. Where the clubhouse goes is like the first decision before even the routing of the golf course. And then it's the routing of the golf course, and then it's where the range goes. That's kind of the way it works. Not always, but you don't really have this massive say is like the parking lot goes here, the range goes here, the practice putting green goes here, the chipping green goes here. That stuff certainly does not happen before the golf course, if you want the golf course to be as good as it can be. That being said, I think the dream is everything surrounds, hugs the clubhouse tightly, meaning the parking lot, the men's locker room, the range, the actual physical space that you're hitting balls, the putting green, the chipping green, the check-in with the starter and the first tee. Ideally, all of those things hug the clubhouse very, very tightly, just in a circle or something. And I really like this idea of flow that you mentioned earlier when it comes to leaving the range, getting some chips in, getting some putting in, because what happens most of the time is you end up sacrificing one for the other. You're like, I'm not going to hit a bunker shot. I'm just going to hit a couple chips and then I'm going to go hit some 30 footers because
It's not convenient.
what am I going to hit a lot of today? It's going to be 30 footers, or 4 footers, whatever. My ideal setup would be, hey, let's shrink things a little bit so that you don't feel tempted to go hit, you know, I'm about to say it, Henry, bear with me, 35 yard chip shots. Just, ugh, God, fuck. Ideally, you want the opportunity to pull out a wedge, hit 3, 4, 5 shots from varying lies, and then walk right onto the putting green. I love what all the sort of mounding and ridges that Old Barnwell did. I would take inspiration from those to kind of make the putting green and chipping green the same thing, but make it not feel like it in a way, so that you can simply hit your few chips and then walk 20 feet over and hit a couple putts. Putting green has to merge with the first tee in some sort of way. If it's not literally merging, it should be a couple steps away, in my opinion. I
Literally
think that
merging
just,
is one of those baller moves ever. Have you played a
yeah.
course where they mer is really, holy,
Tee off
it's
of the putting
just
green.
so good. Yeah.
It makes you feel bad, but in the best way, you know?
Yes.
And I think the starters, I don't think you should even have to walk into the pro shop. I think there should be some sort of whether it's digital, like click into a computer, like, hey, I'm here for my tea time. These people are joining me. Anything to avoid the, 20 minute conversation that with somebody that tends to happen before tea time. It's like, let's keep the flow. Henry Ford, we're wasting time here. So let's get after it. And then we can socialize after the round. But that's kind of my pitch for the flow of things. Any ordering that you feel like is messed up there? Do you prefer to change first? Do you want to go check in with the pro shop first? Any tweaks you would make there?
Two quick things. First, this is not on topic, but that's fine. Henry Ford, total dog, great name. My favorite Henry Ford story. Have you ever heard about the boxes he would have parts shipped in for cars?
No.
So I don't know who the exact manufacturers were of car parts for kind of OG Fords. But he basically made this pitch to them that for proper airflow for, let's pretend that it's a bunch of steering wheels, right? Like it's some metal piece that's a part of the car that's going to go onto the assembly line that we've talked about. He would say to the manufacturer for proper airflow for those steering wheel components that he needed the box to be cut exactly in certain ways. He would need holes cut out here, holes cut out there with exact specifications that just so happened to be the exact specifications of the floorboards of the car. And so therefore, he would literally have the floorboard shipped to him for free by the manufacturer because they were too dumb to realize, like, this bastard's just having us cut holes out so we do his work for him, that we can, put the brake into and the pedals and all that stuff. Just awesome. Just OG dog sort
of
stuff.
I've never heard that. That's really cool.
So that's one. Number two, the only thing I'll add there, I love your spatial planning and the flow. I will say, and you're right, that you don't want to get caught in a 20-minute conversation with the pro shop. But, and I'm not as big a pro shop guy as I used to be when it comes to buying stuff. In fact, I very rarely buy anything anymore. But there are certain courses that you're going to go to, and like you're probably going to get something. And I think for a lot of people, I'm in the minority when I say that it's rare that I buy stuff. For a lot of people, that's a big part of the experience. Shout out our boy JL. Like they're going deep, if not four digits every single time in the pro shop. And so I do think there's some fun to checking in. Please don't do your shopping before. I think shopping is to be done after, but get a little window shopping done, kind of say, oh, okay, do they have hoodies potentially? Do they have vests? Do they have vest hoodies perhaps? What sort of branding do we have? Like kind of get the gears working a little bit. And so you can think about it out there in your round that hopefully doesn't take more than about 4 hours. If not a good bit less than that. What am I doing after? What sort of action are we getting into in the pro shop after? So I think that's kind of an integral part of a really good day at a golf club. But beyond that, I think you laid it out nicely there. I think we have a good outline here for the Thai Golf Club. And, this was a fun conversation about practice. Facilities.
Talking about practice.
Anything else?
No. Thank you all for being here. What time are we at? 10. Yeah, that was great. Everybody have a great week. We'll be with you this week what exactly will be coming with you this week.
We'll keep you posted. We got a couple things in the cooker here, but we've got a fun episode coming regardless. But we can't not talk about the fact that it's a cat week. It is a cat week. It is Monday. He is on the golf course right now at Riviera, getting amongst it. And wow, it's just a good week in golf. So,
when do you think can we talk clothes here for a very brief minute? Do we know what cats wear?
Fuck
this
vowels.
Week?
No, I'm guessing that this is the introduction. I'm guessing this is where we get out there with no vowels, and yeah, I'll be interested to see what he's gaming.
I hope it looks good.
Quick,
but
give,
I know,
okay,
but
give
I
me
know
your
it will.
Last thing. Give me the prediction. What happens?
Well, I better see a fucking mock neck. I mean, I have to.
I was talking golf, but that's what you. If you want to just talk,
I don't give a shit about the golf.
Talk clothing.
No, I just here's what I want to see. I want to see some fairways hit. I want to see no wincing. And I just want to see fucking bombs. If I can get like a nice nipper or two.
Bombs are a given.
Bombs are, I guess they are a given with the back now. All he's doing is just sitting at home, like rolling 40 footers with one hand and the cell phone in his right ear. Just like, yep. Bloop. Yep. Bloop.
What do you think Cat's back management program looks like?
I think it starts at about 2, 3 a.m. and I think it wraps up around 6 or 7, soothed by Call of Duty and takeout pizza. And washed down with some Monster. That's what I think.
I think that's probably about right.
Yeah, I don't think he overcomplicates it. I think he goes David Goggins from 2 a.m. to 4 p.m. And then he just goes straight 14-year-old boy after that. It's just nothing but energy drinks, takeout pizza, and Call of Duty just to relax again. I know he's getting in the ice bath. Are we talking 35 degrees at how long? I mean, what do you think he's doing?
Yeah, no, I think he's doing an obscene amount of time in the ice bath, a time at which, you know, your skin is probably burning after. And I mean, I think the ice bath has been scientifically proven to be one of the great dopamine releasers out there, energy boosters. And I think you're right on it. Like, it's Call of Duty, takeout pizza, ice bath, Monster season. Like, can you imagine if you just like fucking ripped a Monster right after being in an ice bath, what you'd feel like? I think that is Cat's back management program. We have officially lost it. It is Mudball Monday. Happy Cat Week. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. We'll be back on Thursday. We appreciate y'all joining us as always. And until next time, cheers from the Tide Podcast.